So when we started the migrations in February of 2011, which is when we first brought the first users on, we were only doing probably 10 to 100 users a night migrating over into the system. And within the first 2 or 3 months, we ramped that up to about 1,000 a night. And right now we're doing about 5,000 a night.
As you prepared to migrate, how has that preparation changed? Obviously, there's always some training that's involved or some heads up, hey, you're going to be migrated, you know, in the next week or two or month. But how is, from your process perspective, how is your training or your preparation changed?
It is probably the largest kind of stumbling block in the whole process because, you know, nobody really likes change. Even though we've tried to make the migration as seamless as possible to the user, they are aware that it's changing. They are aware that their email address is changing. And there is a set of procedures that they go through both in preparation, during and immediately after their migration to make sure that all their email continues to flow properly. And so we work closely with our mission partners to develop that and make sure, you know, periodically spot check it to make sure that it's still working appropriately. But it is probably the largest kind of hurdle that we have to face on a day-to-day basis.
And I've heard some of that frustration over those new email addresses you mentioned. It used to be simple. It used to be, you know, john.doe@disa.mil. And now it seems like people have told me that's got a lot more complex than it needs to be. Do you hear that from your customers? Or is it just, again, people hate change, so any change they're going to hate?
Well, so I think it's a little bit of both. You know, the email address that we put in place, we work very closely with DMDC, which is the Defense Manpower Data Center, on developing the Enterprise Username Standard, which is what the email address is based off of. It's your first name, dot middle initial, dot last name, a possible number if there's more than one of you in the department, a period, and then your persona type code. So whether you're a civilian, a military, or a contractor, that's actually part of your email address now, and then followed by @mil.mil or @mil.schmil.mil, depending upon if you're on CIPRNet. So you're right, it is a little bit longer than what they're used to in the past, but the big difference is because we're all in one enterprise email system, we had to put that in place to prevent collisions because we are dealing with, you know, the possibility of 3.7 to 4.0 million customers on the single solution.
Not to belabor this too much, John, but is that really a technical issue rather than a policy one, having everybody on the mail.mil domain? I mean, is there a good reason why you couldn't just be john.hale@disa.mil aliased over to the enterprise email system?
So, yes, you could. The problem is when you start doing vanity URLs such as disa.mil or army.mil or jointstaff.mil, et cetera, you know, each time you move within the department, there has to be manual intervention involved in changing your email address, changing the forwarders, and all that kind of stuff. The system we've put in place is it's all automatic. So I can literally, you know, I could change jobs from here at DISA to work for the Army, and my email address literally wouldn't change.
Because you guys have had to set up the email addresses this way, and again, sometimes people see it as a bit laborious, but it will also, in the long run, help you with roles and responsibilities?
Absolutely. By getting everybody into a single username, while it's you're driving your enterprise email account right now, it's actually going to be, we're going to leverage that in follow-on enterprise services. So, for example, we're getting ready to roll out our Defense Enterprise Portal service, which is a portal capability, and it will use the exact same username.
Can you talk a little bit about what that service is going to provide?
Well, it's currently based on Microsoft SharePoint 2010, and it's going to be an enterprise capability where users from across the department can get together, share, collaborate on written documentation prior to publication. That'll be available to the entire DoD. But of course, we are a working capital funded based location. So if customers pay for it, we'll provide it.
And has anybody signed on yet with promises to pay for it?
Actually, we've already had a couple of customers sign up for it. So we're moving down the right road there.
You mentioned the Defense Enterprise Portal service, John. Anything else that this identity synchronization service that you had to set up in order to enable enterprise email, anything you're looking forward to on the immediate short-term horizon that you're going to use that for?
Absolutely. So the services that we have right now, we have the DoD Enterprise Email System. We have the DoD Enterprise Portal service. We've had a service online for quite a while, the Defense Connect Online DCO capability, and that's going to move over onto the same authentication capability. So you can have that online collaboration, live collaboration capability using the same credentials also. And then in the wings, we have the a couple of other services that are currently in development. One is the Defense Enterprise Content Management Capability, which is going to provide an enterprise records management capability for the department, along with our mobility effort. So we're working closely with the DoD CIO on a mobility effort, a DoD mobility effort, which is going to provide our existing BlackBerry capabilities.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more as far as those BlackBerry devices, which have, of course, been a staple of DoD for and the government for quite a while. Is that capability currently sort of baked into the enterprise email service? And what's planned for other mobile devices, if anything, right now?
Yes, it is. So the BlackBerry capability is baked into our Nippernet deployment of enterprise email. Right now we have about 50,000 BlackBerries on the system. We also support the SMEPED devices, which are the secure mobile devices. They were not as widely deployed as BlackBerries were, but there are a few thousand of them out there, and they're a multi-network, multi-secure handheld device. So we're working very closely with PEO comms here in DISA, which is heading our mobility effort from a DoD perspective, as far as supporting other mobile devices, such as the iOS-based devices or the Android-based devices or the Wind Mobile-based devices.
And I guess that's one of the advantages of the system, right? At least having central management and even visibility over these devices. One of the things that I was really surprised by when Army started doing this was they determined that the number of BlackBerry users that they had that they told you to expect to put on the system was about half of what they actually had out there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's a classic case of moving from a decentralized management system to a centralized management system. Is for the first time, it's allowed the Army to kind of get some cost control over their deployed capabilities. I can tell you, I don't think our customers knew how many BlackBerries they had in their arsenal until they migrate on the system and they can look at them in one place.
There was a period of time, and I would say up until pretty recently, whenever I would do an interview or a story about enterprise email in the Army, I would get comments and emails back from users of the service saying there were major reliability problems, outages of hours, sometimes a day or two. And because of that, users relied on paper and pen and phone calls because they couldn't trust their email. Are those problems gone?
Most of those problems that we learned about early on and weren't actually to do with the enterprise email system at all. It was more about the network itself. For the first time ever, we're kind of shifting services in general from the local network to the cloud-based network, to the WAN. And we had to work closely with the organizations and the local bases that were migrating to kind of resolve all those network-type issues. And not to poke any fingers at any one place, but we found cases where, you know, in one particular base, the network path from a given user's workstation to the WAN traveled through 12 different firewalls.
Wow.
And so, yeah, each one of those were put in place for a reason. Each one of those had a function. Those kind of things evolved over years and years and years and years. And now suddenly we're at a place where we're kind of demanding performance from a cloud-based service. And all those kind of things had to be looked at. Once we started kind of looking at that kind of stuff at a hard look like that, we were able to resolve a lot of those kind of performance issues. I think we were both guilty. When we started putting 50, 60,000 users on a particular email system at one of our decks, you know, we did have to optimize our network also. But a large number of the problems were local on the local network at the end user's location.